Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Comptroller distributes $1.1 billion in monthly sales tax revenue. Texas Comptroller Glenn Hager announced on Wednesday he will send cities, counties, transit systems, and special purpose districts $1.06 billion in local sales tax allocations for October, 17.4% more than in October 2021. These allocations are based on sales made in August by businesses that report tax monthly. The City of Odessa's net payment for this period is $5,721,617.33, which is an increase of 31.25% from 2021. The payment year to date is $51,962,006.14, an increase of 18.18% from 2021. UTPB Library goes modern. Part of University of Texas Permian Basin's campus transformation includes the renovation of the J. Conrad Dunnigan Library. The first floor of the two-story structure will be open plan. Plans are to include esports, an innovation lab, printers, study spaces, an event space with a stage and seating for about 100 people, or a little more offices for the Blackstone launch pad. The Student Entrepreneurship Group and a new Office of Innovation and Commercialization employee, said Brian Shedd, Executive Director, Office of Innovation and Commercialization, and Interim Vice President for Research. The first floor space encloses 9,000 square feet and will be filled with lots of natural light. They moved into the library in 2000. The common seating area will be modular seating with different layouts. Some will include technology for presentations or power hookups so students can plug in their laptops. There will be group seating and solo seating. It's really going to be an inviting space with a lot of different seating options for the students, Shedd said. The esports arena will have large TVs so gaming can be projected onto the commons area for bigger events. The room itself will have a glass door and it can be open during events so people can come in and out of the competition space. We will have two rows of desks that come out from the side here that are going to have our 12 high-performance gaming workstations for doing the desktop gaming and networked gaming. Against the far wall, we have four TVs for doing more console and casual gaming. We'll have some different seating options up in the front for those activities, Shedd said. The STEM Academy has an esports program, so they will be able to use the gaming space as well, he added. The popular esports right now are Counter-Strike, Overwatch, and Valorant, which are multiplayer network games, Shedd said. For the console games, it's Tekken, Smash Brothers, and Mario Kart. They have some really big tournaments around some of the console gaming as well, Shedd said. We have students that are part of our coalition of gamers, and they have a list of gaming games that their members are most interested in. You'll have a competitive team built around one particular game, and that's all they'll do. We're talking with athletics right now because there are a lot of schools that are actually offering athletic scholarships for esports now, and so we think over time there might be an athletic component here as well, which will be good as we grow, he added. The event space will have movable barriers to separate it from the commons area. It can be used for things like poster presentations and science fair demonstrations. The Innovation Lab will have 16 3D printers, stations for student workers, and movable workstations. The books and academic study spaces have moved to the second floor. The project architecture is Park Hill, and the contractor is MW Builders. Construction is expected to be completed in December, but the furniture won't arrive until February or March. We'll probably start having some events to welcome people into the space come January or February. And then definitely, as we get the furniture in and the rest of the technology in, we're thinking of doing a soft launch here as well as the seed building, because those projects are connected. We'll probably do a soft launch in the spring and then have a big grand opening next fall, Shed said. The seed renovations are expected to be completed around the same time as the library. The cost for both projects is about $8 million, with the library coming in at $3,495,000. They're making a lot of progress. The renovations that we're doing there, I would say, is a little bit more substantial than what we're doing here, just because we're adding a lot of lab space there and turning over a lot of rooms. Here it was furniture leaves, furniture comes back. We added the Innovation Lab and the eSports Arena, but those were really the only two new spaces that were built on, Shed said. The more contemplative, quiet, steady space will be upstairs. We've done some informal sound testing just to be sure. The good thing is that we have a really, really thick floor here, so there's not going to be the noise transmitted this way, Shed said, pointing up. But because this is open and the stairway's opened, if we have an event or something like that, we just need to make sure that we're mindful of timing and making sure students know when things are going to happen here that it might be a little louder. A student committee helped pick out the furniture, and a coalition of gamers has been helping to select the gaming systems. We're almost done picking out the gaming systems for the eSports Arena, and they've also walked through the Innovation Lab just so we can talk about equipment that's going in there and what they might want. They asked for some vinyl cutters just to do different types of projects, Shed said. He added that Vice President for Student Development and Leadership, Becky Spurlock, thought it was important to get students' input to make sure they had a voice in all of the planning and innovation activities. Jose Chavez was part of a group of students selected to give input on the renovations furniture. The university put together students from different organizations such as Student Government Association, the Coalition of Organized Gaming, etc. It was great to be able to get input and represent my peers and the needs of fellow students. Also, I applaud the university for bringing in students and for taking into consideration our opinions of what we would like to see in the building. We will be using daily, Chavez said in an email. Better Business Bureau warns of scams following severe Fort Stockton hailstorm. The Better Business Bureau has issued a press release that detailed as consumers and businesses in Fort Stockton recover from flooding brought about by rain and hail Monday evening, many people are looking at the devastation and wondering where to start. Unfortunately, scammers following in the wake of natural disasters known as storm chasers make the recovery process even more challenging. These scammers look to capitalize on home and business owners who, in their desperation for immediate repairs, may not exercise as much caution when contracting the services of a repair company. Hail can severely damage residential and commercial roofs, along with windshields, side view mirrors, and the bodies of vehicles. Some regions reported ping-pong ball-sized hail in the latest storm, significantly increasing the possibility of extensive damage. Although not all storm chasers are scammers, they may lack the proper licensing for your area, offer quick fixes, or make big promises they can't deliver. Often found soliciting services door-to-door, they make offers but disappear after accepting payment. Avoid hiring any contractor who uses high-pressure sales tactics such as today-only offers or demands full payment up front. In the aftermath of flooding and hail in the Fort Stockton area, BBB offers the following advice to begin the recovery effort and avoid storm chaser scams. Find out if you're covered. Basic homeowners insurance policies offered do not include damages occurring from flooding. Basic water damages that most homeowners insurance covers are focused on sudden and accidental situations, such as a busted water pipe. Call your insurance company immediately to report the damage and discuss how to proceed with repairs, and ask if your policy includes flood protection. Make sure you understand how your insurance company will reimburse your repair costs. Take photos or video of damage inside and outside of your home, as well as in your immediate area. Do your research. After an insurance adjuster has surveyed your flood damage, you will need to find a reputable company to make repairs. Check with BBB.org to find a trustworthy business such as roofing contractors or construction services. Get several bids. Don't pay large fees upfront or pay in cash. BBB recommends consumers solicit bids from at least 3 different companies. All bids should be in writing and should provide a full description of the services to be provided. If approached by someone offering a free roof inspection, proceed with caution, as it may be a scam. Ask for a timeline. Find out how long the repair will take. If the damage was heavy in your area, it might take longer to schedule the repairs. Be sure to check with government organizations to see if you can qualify for assistance, especially if damage in your residence is so extensive it is not safe to live in without repairs. Get everything in writing. Be sure all work is explained in the contract, including cleanup, waste disposal, and completion dates. Any verbal agreements should be included in the contract. Clean up safely. When floodwaters recede and cleanup efforts begin, exercise caution when walking or working around damaged areas. Mold can begin growing on wet or damp material within 24 hours. It is often encouraged to discard any absorbent material that cannot be completely dried out. Floodwaters can collect a variety of chemicals and substances, from household cleaners to bacteria and diseases. To protect yourself from germs in the water, mold on surfaces, and the chemicals in cleaning supplies, cover your body. Wear pants, long sleeves, boots, and rubber gloves. Visit cdc.gov for guidance on how to clean up safely after a natural disaster. Pink pantries open around ECISD. 5 of 6 middle schools and the 2 Ector County ISD high schools now have pink pantries with free feminine hygiene products. The pantries, which opened a month ago, come courtesy of communities and schools through a grant from Junior League of Odessa. Communities and Schools is a dropout prevention program that also includes mental health and academic support. The school with pink pantries are Wilson and Young, Nimitz, Bonham, Bowie, and Crockett Middle Schools, plus the Alternative Center, Odessa and Permian High Schools. Communities in Schools Executive Director Alicio Aliciando said the pantries were underwritten with a $10,000 grant from the Odessa Junior League. "We provide whatever services and products that we need basically to all of our kids to keep them in school and get them graduated. This is just another aspect of that. We kind of did it with a piecemeal fashion. We provide hygiene products among all other supplies that these guys give out to the kids. Feminine hygiene products are involved in that, obviously, but now this is a concerted effort," Elizondo said. They started Pink Pantries in Midland ISD with the Junior League of Midland about 4 years ago, but they also knew there was a big need in Odessa. The Junior League here approached CIS about the Pink Pantry in schools, and along with the underwriting, will provide volunteers to help with the resupply. "We are managing administering the program on-site at ECISD campuses that we serve," Elizondo said. He added that it's not just for young women in the CIS program, but for any women on the campus. Inadelia Yurita, campus coordinator at PHS, said most of their offices are pretty good sized. We have a food pantry, we have a clothes pantry, a school supply pantry, and now the pink pantry. So for us, it's in our offices, Yurita said. Michael Alva, campus coordinator at OHS, said his office has floor-to-ceiling shelves. The food pantry is on one side. I have school supplies in the middle, and then the pink pantry. It's closer to the door. It's actually behind the door, so it's a little more discreet. The students already know what they can and can't grab, Alva said. He added that they keep track for restocking purposes of what's distributed. There is no identifying information. There are large pink top bins, and the grant funding is being used to purchase the products. But eventually, there's a hope that either through donations or recognitions with affiliated retailers, possibly, and deals being made to supply that for us, if not for free, at a discounted rate, Elizondo said. That's really the crux of it. It's 2022, and it's ridiculous, but we have young ladies that aren't able to come to school because it's that time of the month for them. Either they can't afford it because feminine hygiene products cost so much, he added. Many of the students' communities and schools serve are from lower socioeconomic levels, so it's difficult to buy feminine products, Elizondo said. Yurita noted that there are many grandparents and single dads raising girls who may not feel comfortable picking up products for their girls, so the pink pantries are a way to make it a little easier. Many times I've had conversations with single fathers about approaching that situation, Alva said. Yurita said students have a hard time getting undergarments, especially the girls, so they will also be receiving those. Elizondo said nurses' offices generally supply hospital-sized pads. Yurita said they only supply one. Elizondo added that there is a little bit of everything in the pink pantries, like pantry liners, tampons, and pads. We have the undergarments. We have also feminine wash if an accident happens. We have the pads, and then we have the pantry liners as well, Yurita said. So, with that being said, when they do go to the nurse's office and an accident happens, they get sent to us anyway, usually because they need pants or undergarments. The nurse also gives out one pad per student, and they're the hospital ones, so they're humongous. For our girls that are light or very petite, they just don't accommodate those girls, so we'll be getting that as well. Elizondo said they are not promoting the use of anything specific. They just try to have whatever the young woman is used to using. It's very much cultural choice. Thousands of students are served by CIS in Odessa. We also don't just service social needs, we service as academic and attendance, Yurita said. Elizondo said the case managers hold small group and campus-wide events. It's hard to tell exactly how many students we serve through our services, Elizondo said. Yurita said they also serve adults and teachers. Elizondo said they started with food pantries in partnership with the West Texas Food Bank and were shocked at the stories of staff and faculty dropping by for items. He said he knew students use the services, but that extends to their families as well. We kind of expect it now for anything that we open up when it comes to products that we provide, Elizondo said. We're already running out of inventory halfway through the first month, Elizondo said.
Hello, this is Michael reading sports, beginning with articles from the Odessa American, published Thursday, October 13th. High school football, week 8. Another stern test for Panthers. Permian host Midland Legacy Friday. Forget the records. Forget what happened last week against Odessa High. Forget the first 6 weeks of the 2022 season. This week for the Permian football team is about focusing on Midland Legacy. It's a wounded Rebels team coming into the match on a 3-game losing streak after opening District 2-6A play last week with a loss at Wolforth Friendship. The last time Midland Legacy lost 3 games in a row was 2016 in Coach Clint Hartman's first season. You can throw out the records, Permian head coach Jeff Ellison said. This is another big game for us, and Midland legacy is the only thing we're focused on, and the players have done a great job all season with that. The Panthers, 6-0 overall, 1-0 in District 2 6A. Head into the matchup after a convincing 38-7 victory Friday against rival Odessa High. The Rebels, 2-6, 0-1, one of the preseason favorites to battle for the district title, still have the weapons to make that happen. They have hurt themselves the last 2 weeks, allowing 89 first-half points in losses to Converse Judson and Wilford Friendship. In both instances, Midland Legacy roared back to make things close, losing 60-50 to Judson and 49-34 to the Tigers. Quarterback Marcos Davila still is having a solid season, having completed 105 of 179 passes for 1,637 yards and 21 touchdowns with 4 interceptions. Deonta Sonier is his top target with 30 receptions for 514 yards and 9 touchdowns. Aiden Serrano has 27 catches for 405 yards and 5 scores. They've gotten behind early the last couple of weeks, but have come back, Ellison said of the Rebels. They are well coached, and they'll be ready. A first. There have been plenty of great players to compete in the crosstown rivalry, including several who have moved on from high school to college to the pros. None, however, matched Harris Sewell's accomplishment. Sewell, a senior offensive lineman headed to Clemson next season, started his fourth Odessa High Permian game, the first player to do so. That's crazy, Ellison said. Harrison has been having a good year and moved into a leadership role this season. Seems like I've been watching him play forever. Time-consuming. With just 48 minutes in a game, more is better when it comes to time of possession. Case in point was the Panthers' offense on Friday against the Broncos. First, they put together a 17-play, 98-yard march for a touchdown that took 8 minutes 22 seconds to complete, beginning in the first quarter and finishing with nearly half the second quarter in the books. Then, after the Permian defense forced a 3-and-out by Odessa High, the Panthers' offense ran for the final 4 minutes 55 seconds of the second quarter, scoring another touchdown on the final play of the first half. Total time of possession for the two drives, 13 minutes 17 seconds, more than a full quarter of play. It's what we are trying to do on offense, Ellison said. I was really proud of the way we held on to the ball as well. Our backs have been doing a great job, and we have a good rotation back there. Lower levels. The junior varsity and freshman teams lost 3 of 4 last week to the rival Broncos and will be looking to bounce back against the Rebels. Freshman White will get started at 6 p.m. on the Ratliff Stadium South Field, with the freshman black squad playing at 6:30 p.m. Meanwhile, the JV white team will travel to Midland for a 5 p.m. game, followed by the JV black at 6:30 p.m. Broncos work on fixing mistakes. Key District 2-6A matchup against Bobcats. Odessa High, which stumbled out of the gates in a loss to rival Permian, attempts to right the wrongs on offense as it hits the road for its District 2-6A matchup of the season against San Angelo Central on Friday. We have had a great week of practice, head coach Dusty Ortiz said. We need to prepare to win, execute more during practice, clean up the mistakes we have had the past couple of weeks, and just make sure that we are firing on all cylinders come Friday. Against Permian, the Broncos attempted 22 passes, most coming after they were trailing 24-0 at the half. The team started off the game with consecutive 3-and-outs and continued sputtering on offense all night. A lot of our struggles have been just getting into a rhythm, Ortiz said. When you look at the games that we have struggled offensively, we did not extend drives. We did not have many possessions as well. San Angelo Central, 4-2, 1-0 in District 6A, has an up-tempo offense that averages 40 points per game. Ortiz feels like that his Broncos, 3-3, 0-1, can use that light-speed offense to his team's advantage. The Bobcats are going to play a fast-paced offense, and that's going to help us out, Ortiz said. We should have many more possessions. That will help us get in the rhythm, which will help the offense score and get back on track. Contain Hill. Tyler Hills, the Bobcats' senior quarterback, has been the high point man for Central this season. He averages 141 rushing yards per game, more than Odessa High averages per game, with a season-high 246 rushing yards and three touchdowns in a 63-61 win over Abilene Wiley on September 23rd. Hill is a great athlete, Ortiz said. He's on the track team and he has a lot of speed. The Bobcats do a lot of read option plays with Hill when he is reading an inside run. If we don't do our job, technically and fundamentally on defense, he is going to pull it and get 20 yards before we can even figure out what is going on. Forcing turnovers. The Broncos have started off slow in the turnover department this season. The team has only three all season, all three coming against Schertz Clemens on September 24th at Ratliff Stadium. Ortiz said that by creating more offensive possessions, the team can have a better overall rhythm in the future games, including against Central on Friday. When we get those takeaways and turnovers, it gives our offense rhythm and helps us give a chance to score, Ortiz said. Our foundation of the team is our offense and scoring, so we've got to work on getting more turnovers. The more turnovers, the more we can make our opponent's offense punt. That increases our chances of winning and also increases our chance of our offense to score some points. Lower level. The freshmen defeated the Panthers 28-24 this past Thursday night at Ratliff Stadium. The JV red and white teams also defeated the Panthers 24-22 and 30-14 respectively against their crosstown rivals. The freshman white team faces San Angelo Central at 5 p.m. Thursday at San Angelo Stadium. The freshman red team will take the field immediately following. The JV white team will also battle against the Bobcats, but at home at 5 p.m. Thursday at Ratliff Stadium. Now, shifting to the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, October 13th. Permian provides Rebels turnaround opportunity by Christopher Hattern. Last month has been a rough time for the legacy football team. The Rebels, 2-4, 0-1, are on their first three-game losing streak since 2016 when Clint Hartman debuted as the team's head coach. LHS didn't start District 2-6A play on a high note last week as it fell behind 42-7 during a 49-34 loss to Wolforth Friendship. The task doesn't get any easier this week as the Rebels visit their arch-rival Odessa Permian, 6-0, 1-0, for a 7 p.m. kickoff Friday at Ratliff Stadium. However, LHS views it as the perfect opportunity to turn around its season with a victory against an unbeaten Panthers team. You have to move forward and be positive, Hartman said. These games are tight. It's going to be a four-quarter war. We know what it's about, and they know what's it about. You'll get the best from both sides this week. Against Friendship, Legacy's offense put up yardage, as quarterback Marcos Davila threw for 311 yards and combined on four total touchdowns. The Rebels were also able to run the ball, as senior Zeke Luna rushed 20 times for 140 yards and a score. But on the downside, LHS didn't get its offense going until a 21-point third quarter. The Rebels face a Permian team that has allowed only an average of 16.1 points this season. The Panthers' defense did not allow an offensive score last week during a 38-7 rout of Odessa High. Hartman says senior defensive lineman Desmond Hill and senior safety Bryce Woody stand out on film when he watches the Panthers' defense. Hartman says the Panthers' defensive coordinator, Vance Washington, has historically done a good job of game planning against the Rebels and mixing up his defensive strategy. Defensively, they're playing the best out of anybody around here right now, Hartman said. They haven't given up very many points, so that will be a huge challenge. What are they going to give us? Are they going to stick with what has been working, blitzing and playing, man? Or are they going to play a zone? Like I said, we'll have to figure that out early and see what they want to do. The LHS defense settled down in the second half against Friendship after it allowed 42 first-half points. Tigers quarterback Hudson Hutchison had 425 yards passing and 6 TD passes before halftime. This week, the Rebels will face another challenge against Permian dual-threat quarterback Rodney Hill, who has passed for 850 yards, rushed for 269 yards, and has accounted for 12 total TDs this season. The Hall kid is dynamic with his legs and can extend plays, Hartman said. He can hurt you on the draw. He can hurt you when he throws the ball. When he's outside the pocket, he can take off. He's a hard-to-handle kid. Hartman said senior wide receiver Jaquan Richardson and senior slot Tabari Jones, along with Hill, are the Panthers' top offensive weapons. Hartman says Permian has been running less of its triple option plays and been implementing more spread stuff. The LHS defense will have to start better, as it also gave up 47 first-half points in a 60-50 loss to Converse Judson on September 23rd. We have a bunch of good-looking, great defensive backs that aren't playing very well because we're having busted coverages, Hartman said. What you do is you go back, you back off, and you do things that you've done here before. That's the big thing, is to keep it simple. Let the kids play. Hartman says the best part about this game is that his kids will be fired up to play when they walk off the bus. When you take the job as the head coach here, you know about this game, Hartman said. You're not about to give them a big pregame speech. They know what this is about. They've been playing these kids since they were in peewee football. Also from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Bulldogs defense to face another tough challenge, by Christopher Hattern. 1 week after facing one of the district's top playmaking quarterbacks, Midland High will face another highly productive quarterback at 7 p.m. Friday. The Bulldogs, 4-2, 0-1, host Wolfworth Friendship, 5-1, 1-0, for their second District 2-6A football game at Astound Broadband Stadium. This time, the challenge will be slowing down Tigers quarterback Hudson Hutchison, who threw for 477 yards and accounted for 7 total touchdowns in a stunning 49-34 win over Legacy last Friday. Hutchison passed for 425 yards and had 6 TD passes before halftime that helped Friendship bury the Rebels with a 42-7 lead. It will be another challenge for MHS after it faced quarterback Tyler Hill in its 28-25 loss to San Angelo Central last week. The Bulldogs limited Hill to only 94 yards passing on a wet night, but Hill propelled the Bobcats to victory behind a 174-yard rushing effort on only 6 carries. Hill's runs of 67, 42, and 59 yards will set up 3 separate central touchdowns. It's another good offense and another good quarterback with several weapons at receiver, MHS head coach Thad Fortune said of the Tigers. We've got nearly an identical game plan, which is kind of the same for us every week, though. We want to control the ball, keep their offense off the field, keep our defense fresh. Saying all that, you still have to finish your drives and you've got to score. So it will be a big-time challenge for us, a big-time test to contain their offense. The Bulldogs had a solid showing operating their triple option offense as they amassed 338 rushing yards against Central. MHS had 2 100-yard ball carriers, as Briley Perez led the way with 132 yards and a TD on 16 carries, while Mekki McCoy contributed with 105 yards and 2 scores on 22 rushing attempts. In the second quarter against Central, the Bulldogs had 2 separate offensive drives enter the red zone, and they managed only 3 total points from them. The second possession ended with a fumble loss. We just got off schedule a few times there, and we couldn't get back on track, Fortune said. Finishing drives is big, and then defensively, I thought we did a lot of good things. We held up pretty well all night, and we did our best to keep Tyler Hill in check. He had a couple of huge runs that he got loose on us. We didn't want that to happen. We wanted to keep him off the field, and we did a pretty good job of that, but they still made some big plays, and we didn't finish those drives. I think those two things combined really did us in. Adding to the challenge of facing Friendship, the Tigers had 3 separate 100-yard receivers in the Legacy game, which includes Landon Hutchison, 144 yards, Tate Beals, 141 yards, and Leighton Stone, 123 yards. Fortune said the receiving corps stands out with its height, size, and long limbs. The head coach said generating pressure on the quarterback and forcing turnovers will be key for the Bulldog defense. MHS will be looking to get its first win in district play and avoid an 0-2 start in the five-game district slate. The top four teams in the 6-team district make the playoffs. It's winding down quick, but it's still early, Fortune said. All of our goals that we set, they're still on the table. To achieve those goals, we need to get this one. It's just another big game for our program. We thought last week was a big game. It would have helped our program to take a lot of steps forward. And this week is the same thing as that, so it would be a huge win for our program. We've got to go out and just play our brand of football and play as hard as we can, and then we'll see how the chips fall. Now reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram edition published Wednesday, October 12th. Area Football Notebook. Greenwood looks to clean up defense, by Oscar Leroy. Greenwood coach Rusty Purser wasn't too happy with the way his team played defensively, especially early, in a 35-13 victory over Snyder in the District 3-4A Division II opener last Friday. Purser said penalties and other mistakes helped to extend Tiger drives and put the defense in a tough spot. The Rangers, 4-3, 1-0, were flagged 9 times for 88 yards. Early on, we got frustrated with ourselves and we let it linger. We wouldn't get out of our own way, Purser said. We've got to improve on our discipline. We've got to play fast and be physical, but we also have to play smart. Even though the defense had issues at times, the Rangers still held the Tigers to 276 total yards as the Rangers bent but didn't break at times. Snyder also missed a 48-yard field goal attempt in the second quarter. They tried that long field goal, which they didn't get, and they also had to go for it on fourth and long and fourth and mediums a couple of times, Purser said. Our defense was able to come up with some stops in the third and fourth quarters. Purser said he was really pleased with the running game as the Rangers had 328 yards on the ground. We had intentions to throw the ball more, but we stuck with what was working, he said. Something we continue to work on is our passing game with our two quarterbacks, Dylan Dominguez and Rance Purser. But if we can run the ball 400 yards and win the game by doing that, then that's what we'll do. That might be what we'll have to do until we get Ty Flowers back. The Rangers will look to extend their winning streak to 3 games when they visit rival Sweetwater, 1-5, 0-0, on Friday. Sweetwater has beaten Greenwood the last 2 years, and the win over the Rangers in 2020 cost Greenwood a shot at the district title. Sweetwater has been our nemesis over the last couple of years, so this is a big game for us, Purser said. I can tell you that we're definitely motivated. The kids are focused and up to the task of going over there and playing well. They know how important this game is. We need to go over there and have a good night. Hershey-Graham game still up in the air. The status of the Wichita Falls Hershey-Graham game will be discussed during a 3-4A Division II District Executive Committee meeting on Wednesday. Purser said he will be a part of that meeting, but Greenwood ISD Superintendent Ariel Elliott will have a vote. Last Friday's game between Hershey and Graham in Graham was suspended in the third quarter following a brawl between players on the field, with Hershey leading 24-14. The tension between the two schools began when racist comments were made toward Hershey by an unidentified person claiming to be from Graham on a Dave Campbell's Football Friday app. Tension only grew during the game between the two teams before a fight broke out on the field. The game was supposed to resume on Saturday, but after determining the number of players who would be suspended for the brawl, it was decided that the game could not resume. The District 3-4A District Executive Committee will have to meet to determine the official winner of the game, Wichita Falls ISD Athletic Director Scott Hafley said in a statement. The suspended players will be benched for a minimum of one half of the next contest. Purser said that all scenarios will be discussed, but couldn't speculate on what might happen until they have the meeting. Andrews defense impressive and win. The Andrews defense had an impressive night as the Mustangs rolled to a 33-0 victory over San Angelo Lakeview in the District 2-4A Division 1 opener at the Mustang Bowl. The Mustangs, 5-2, 1-0, held the Chiefs to 126 total yards and forced three turnovers. Our defense was the biggest difference, Andrews coach Tom Harvey said. I think our offense was superb too, and they kept the ball away from them. The defense not only handled a really good running attack, but we were able to get a shutout, which was big for us. It was a good way to start district. Hopefully we can go on a little run. The Mustangs next turned their attention to Lubbock Estacado, 3-3, 0-0, which Harvey said is a lot better than its record indicates. A key player from Estacado to watch is 6'3", 200-pound sophomore running back Bobby Ross, already considered a four-star recruit by 247 Sports. They are good on offense and good on defense, said Harvey of the Matadors. They have a lot of talent, they're well-coached, and they're getting better every week. I think a lot of Estacado. They're one of the best 3-3 teams you'll see. Fort Sand readies for long trip. After an impressive victory, 47-7, over Reagan County to begin District 3, 2A Division 1 play, Fort Sand now has to get ready for its longest trip of the season. The Buffaloes, 5-1, 1-0, will head about 377 miles west to face Anthony, 4-2, 0-1, on Friday. And Fort Sand coach Jason Phillips said the staff has been planning the trip for a few weeks. Anthony is located right off Interstate 10 north of El Paso and right on the Texas-New Mexico border. I think we have an old enough and mature enough group to handle the trip, Phillips said. We're going to take our time getting there and make sure we get a chance to stretch our legs so we won't be cramping on the bus the whole time. Phillips is one of the few in Fort Sand who has experience in making this long trip, as Fort Sand was in the same district with Anthony before the 2014-15 seasons. He said that going on that trip before helps knowing what works and what doesn't. The good news for the Buffaloes is that they're coming off an impressive win over the Owls, and it took the bad taste out of their mouths from a one-point loss at Kermit 2 weeks before. Losing to Kermit in that last pre-district game kind of opened our eyes a bit and got us refocused, Phillips said. Phillips added the defense continues to play outstanding. Fort Sand head the Owls to 283 yards and returned both a fumble and an interception for touchdowns. We had another interception that was called back, but our defense is playing lights out, he said. Our turnover margin is through the charts. Hopefully, we can maintain that through the rest of district. Cahoma gets big win. Cahoma coach Chris Jocelyn set his team's 35-28 victory over Littlefield in the District 4-3A Division 2 opener was one of the program's best wins in recent years. Every time that Littlefield scored, the Bulldogs, 5-1, 1-0, would take back the momentum with a score of their own. The Bulldogs outgained the Wildcats 495-328 and got a big game from freshman quarterback and MRT Area Player of the Week, Boyd Cox, who was 11 of 21 passing for 286 yards and 3 TDs. Tristan Guerrero had 3 catches for 149 and 3 TDs, and Jaden Vineyard added 146 yards rushing and a TD on 23 carries. Defensively, we gave up 2 explosive plays, which is something we haven't done much this season. But I was excited about the way our kids kept fighting, Jocelyn said. Every time they would score, our kids would answer. The Bulldogs have won 5 straight games and will look to extend that winning streak when they travel to face Idaloo, 3-3, 0-1, which is coming off a 20-3 loss to Abernathy. Garden City takes care of business. The number 7-ranked Garden City football team got the start it wanted in a decisive 70-20 victory over Grady in the District 6-1A Division 1 opener on Friday. Garden City took a 32-0 lead in the opening quarter to put away the game early. The Bearcats held Grady to just 172 total yards and ended the game in the third quarter because of the 45-point mercy rule. I like how we came out hot, Garden City coach Jeff Jones said. We played three really good teams before this game, and I didn't want to see a letdown. Take nothing away from Grady, but they weren't the same caliber of the teams we had been playing. That's how you want to start off district, especially if district championship is a long-term goal. The Bearcats, 6-1, 1-0, travel to Borden County, 4-2, 0-0, on Friday, in another key game for the Bearcats in their quest for a district title. The Coyotes are a traditional power, but are young this season. Jones still thinks the Coyotes can be a dangerous team. They have one of the better players in the state of Texas, Ishmael Rodriguez. They get after you. They're very aggressive and are fundamentally sound, Jones said. It should be a typical Garden City, Borden County high-intensity game. We respect the heck out of their team, and their coach, Trey Ritchie, is one of the best to ever do it. Private school report. MCS enjoys nail-biting win, prepares for Argyle Liberty, by Oscar Leroy. Midland Christian coach Chris Cunningham said getting a 28-26 victory over Fort Worth All Saints was huge in the TAPS Division II District 1 race. Cunningham said he viewed All Saints and Argyle Liberty to be the two toughest teams in district after both of those programs joined MCS and dropping down from Division 1. So getting a win over one of those teams to start district play could go a long way for the Mustangs, 3-3, 1-0, if they want a chance to win district title. All Saints has always been Division 1, and I felt that they were going to be a tough team, Cunningham said. We took advantage of the turnovers and the kicking game. We did a good job at the right time, and we were able to pull it out. A critical play came with 1:12 remaining in the game. All Saints had just scored to pull within 28-26, and the Saints lined up for the two-point conversion try. Cunningham said that the Saints had not tried to establish much of a run game, and they knew that they would most likely try to pass. Our guys did a great job, and they were where they needed to be and kept that coverage tight. They dropped the ball, and that was fortunate for us, Cunningham said. Cunningham, another key plan, came right before the half when the Saints drove to the MCS 2-yard line, but the defense was able to keep them out of the end zone. The Saints then missed a 19-yard field goal to keep MCS ahead 14-13 at the half. I'm real proud of our kids hanging in there, Cunningham said. Special teams seemed to be crucial the entire night. A mishandled snap on a pat on the first score of the game cost the Saints a point, and then Mustang Colton Newsom had a couple of key plays to help the Mustangs. The first was returning a punt 70 yards for MCS's first TD of the game. Then later on, when Newsom was punting, Cunningham said he recovered from getting a ball on the bad snap, avoided the defensive pressure, broke containment the outside, and then rugby kicked it 25-30 yards downfield. That flipped the field from where it would have been, Cunningham said. He also had an interception for a very good game all around. Cunningham said his team finding ways to make plays showed that they were not only prepared, but believed in each other. Somebody is going to make the play in the game that requires you to come out on top, he said. We were able to do that in several places on Friday night. Cunningham also lauded the play from quarterback Blake Pruitt, 113 yards passing, 72 yards rushing, 3 TDs, and the offensive line, which set the tone up front. I was proud of the way Blake played, he said. It wasn't as smooth as the gym that he had against Del Rio, but didn't expect it to be with All Saints being a better team. But he had some big runs and some big throws. And then the offensive line, when we needed them to dominate, they dominated. And All Saints had a good defensive line. I was proud of our kids. The Mustangs should have another challenge this week when they travel to play Argyle Liberty, 6-1, 1-0, coached by former Dallas Cowboys tight end great Jason Witten. The Warriors have improved a lot from last year when they went 2-8, playing a lot of young players. They are definitely one of the most improved teams in the state, and you could see it coming if you knew the pulse of that place, Cunningham said. I've played them 18 times as a coach going back to my time at Plano Prestonwood. This may be the best defense I've ever seen them have. Last year, they kind of committed to the youth that they had and took their lumps with a lot of freshmen and sophomores. They were playing for what was to come. The kids are more seasoned, and the sophomores don't play like sophomores.
Metformin sugar deprivation. Dear Dr. Roach, my wife is a type 2 diabetic and takes metformin twice a day. However, her new primary doctor said that metformin deprives the muscle of sugar, which they need for energy. Therefore, muscle wasting will slowly occur. Should she continue taking her medicine, or I? Answer, that's not correct. Metformin works primarily by reducing the amount of sugar the body makes. Blood sugar can either come from what you eat or by the liver producing and releasing sugar into the blood. With less sugar in the blood from the liver, the insulin a person with diabetes has relies on the sugar from the diet. Insulin is needed to bring sugar efficiently into the cells, so when your insulin is working more efficiently, metformin actually helps muscle cells get and use sugar through a second mechanism. Your muscles work better. Metformin does tend to help people lose weight, but they tend to lose fat, not muscle. Metformin remains one of the most important medicines for type 2 diabetes and is associated with improved overall mortality compared to several other drugs.
Here is the Dear Abby column that appeared in the Midland Reporter Telegram on Thursday, October 13th. Mom suspects daughter's boyfriend of cheating. Dear Abby, we recently found out my 19-year-old daughter is pregnant. This is her first boyfriend, and she is absolutely smitten with him. He has asked her to marry him, and we are excited and happy for her, but there is one thing we are having a hard time with. I am almost certain he is cheating on her. They live with us, so I can see the signs. He says he's working late, and several times even told her he had to work all night. He's always on his phone, and he never allows her to see it. He keeps it on silent and face down. When he gets a text message, which is often, he immediately says he has to go to the bathroom. Then he stays in there for about a half hour. I have tried talking to her about what I'm seeing, but she gets mad at me. She says she trusts him and insists he would never cheat on her. It's painful to watch this happening to her, and I don't know how to handle it. Should I continue bringing it up or let her find out on her own? Signed, Knows All Too Well. Dear Knows, you have already brought it up. Your daughter should not rush into marriage just because she is pregnant, if that's her intention. Because her boyfriend is living with you, he's likely not mature or financially stable enough to be married to anyone. What do his parents think about this? I was tempted to advise you to hire a private investigator to find out if the young man is really working late or all night, but I'm not sure you need to go to that expense. The truth will eventually reveal itself. In the meantime, give your daughter plenty of emotional support because she is going to need it and probably more. Dear Abby, I married my high school sweetheart in 1967. In 1979, after 12 years of marriage, we refinanced our mortgage so we could add a room. During the credit check, it was brought to my attention that my wife had borrowed $14,000 and opened a secret mailbox in a different town to hide it from me. The problem was, and still is, that she has refused for 52 years to tell me what it was for. Needless to say, my trust in her was shaken. She had no drinking, gambling, or drug problems. I must have asked her 1,000 times what she needed the money for, and still no answer. Our marriage went downhill. I had an affair, and we separated. In 1990, we got back together, but it wasn't the same. The kids were grown, so 4 years later, we divorced. I'm 75 now, remarried 20 years ago, and I still can't figure out why she couldn't tell me the truth to save our marriage. abortion keeps popping into my mind. A day does not go by that it doesn't enter my mind even all these years later. My kids are estranged because all they know is that I had an affair. I suppose I will be wondering until my dying day. Advice? Signed, Still in the Dark. Dear Still, what your ex-wife needed that money for is anybody's guess. She may have used it to bail out a friend who was in trouble. She also could have been paying off a blackmailer. The possibilities are so varied that guessing her motive could be a parlor game. Since you asked, my advice to you is to finally let the past stay in the past and quit upsetting yourself over something you will never get a straight answer about. There are few more effective ways to diminish the joys of the present than to do what you're doing.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.